This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of The Joy Challenge. Discover the ancient secret to experiencing worry-defeating, circumstance-defying happiness. Written by pastor and best-selling author Randy Frazee and is available everywhere audiobooks are sold.
They had hired me when this magazine was in a crisis, and Billy was out of the country. So I thought it was so interesting that Billy, he asked me some tough questions. In fact, he said, you know, some people say that you're just really in this for the money. And I said, well, you know, it's a nonprofit, and I long ago, you know, committed myself. I wanted to be in nonprofits. But it was, I think, his way of just kind of testing to see, you know, where is this guy coming from? And so, we've had a very strong and positive relationship, and we were able to do some very good things with CT.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Calling. I'm Richard Clark, your host and an editor at Christianity Today. We have a special episode for you today in light of the recent passing of Billy Graham. As you may know, he played a big role here at CT, founding the organization. I was really impacted by his death. I was impacted by Billy Graham's life in ways that I'm not sure I could really articulate all of the ways he impacted my life, but one of the things I wanted to do was talk to Harold Myra about Billy Graham and sort of the role he played here at Christianity Today, sort of his own interactions. He actually had a lot of personal interactions with Billy Graham in his time as president. So Harold Myra was the president of Christianity Today from 1975 to 2007. He also wrote a book called The Leadership Secrets of Billy Graham, along with Marshall Shelley, which goes into great detail about an aspect of Billy Graham that I don't think a lot of people are aware of. Billy Graham's known for being an evangelist, a preacher, a media personality, even an advisor to presidents. But I don't think a lot of people are aware of how influential he's been as an entrepreneur. And Christianity Today is one of the sort of key examples of Billy Graham's work as an instigator and arranger of people and resources. Most of what CT would become flowed from his singular vision, and its evolution would be carefully and lightly stewarded by Graham himself over time, even as he sort of slowly backed away. His humility, coupled with a decisive vision for the evangelical movement, made Christianity Today the publication it is today, and it helped to popularize a movement that would change the course of Christianity in the world. Ultimately, as I learned from Harold Myra, and you'll hear today, Graham embraced his role as a bridge between academics and the popular audience, between denominations, even between vast resources and those who might best put them to use. I talked with Harold Myra about his relationship with Billy Graham, and in particular what it was like to watch him work from the inside of one of his own institutions. It turns out that while Graham was most known for his passionate and effective preaching, a lot of his influence flows from his determined and focused leadership, a quality that Graham himself was careful not to go on about too much. And that's, I think, really what's unique about Billy Graham. He's kind of a paradox. He's a person who had so much power, so much influence, but just didn't seek to sort of use it in obvious ways. But then you see it being used. You see it happening. You see it affecting the world in sort of undeniable ways. I think we're going to learn a lot about Billy Graham as we read more about him over the next few days and weeks. And a great place to do that is Christianity Today. We have a special issue that is going to be coming out in our April issue. Will be sent to our people. I think the next issue sent to people will be the Billy Graham special issue. That is something you can get if you go to orderct.com/thecalling. That's orderct.com/thecalling. You can subscribe now and get that issue. I think you have a few weeks to do that. It is full of amazing stuff. Go to our website, look at what's there. I think you'll want to own that issue. You'll want to have that at your house as a collector's item. It is worth having. And as an added bonus, by subscribing to CT Magazine, you'll be supporting Billy Graham's vision of thoughtful, essential journalism and helping us to continue to produce the episodes of The Calling every week. Here's my my interview with Harold Myra. Very grateful for him taking the time out to talk to me about this. Here it is. So when I was reading about Billy Graham, and one of the things that I noticed was people kept calling him Billy. It just feels like with people of that stature, mm-hmm. you would call them Mr. Graham. It feels like either he's like the type that says, call me Billy, or he's the type you don't need his last name, at least in mm-hmm. our circles, because he's like a the only example I can think of is Beyonce or something. Like, he's like a Beyonce type where yeah. you really don't need their last name in order to know who we're talking about. Is that which one of those is more true?
Well, I think that he would insist on being called Billy. He always wanted to be the humble guy. In fact, I just happened to read this morning that at the groundbreaking for the BGEA building years ago, he quoted John the Baptist, he must increase, I must decrease. And he said, I cringe when I hear my name associated with the work that the Lord has done. Yeah. I mean, there was a humility about this man. But, you know, in the book that you're holding, I do mention that it struck me really strange when Sherwood Wirt, who was the editor of his magazine, a PhD, a sophisticated guy, would always refer to him, and this is the only person I know who did this, would refer to him as the boss.
Huh.
And
yeah.
the thing is, here's Billy, who was both the evangelist, the loving pastor, the humble leader, very humble, and yet a CEO, person who really knew how to select people, train people, develop people, inspire people, and to have big dreams of his own and see them accomplished.
What was he the CEO of?
The BGEA, the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, okay. which was very, very well-managed and had a tremendous impact. I mean, the Lausanne conferences, all of these things came out of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association.
Can you count for us the first time that you met Billy Graham?
Well, the very first time I saw him was 1957 at the New York Crusade. I remember, you know, being there and participating. And, you know, back then, Billy Graham, there was an awe about him, and that continued. But I remember we happened to be outside, and we saw Billy leaving the stadium and darting into a cab. And we thought, well, that's really cool.
Yeah.
But then years later, when I was appointed the CEO of Christianity Today, uh-huh. The first time I met him, he called me to meet with him in Phoenix. He happened to be in Phoenix.
Okay.
And I think he wanted to figure out, well, who is this guy
right.
that just became, you know, CEO of Christianity yeah. Today? Because Harold Ockingay, his long-term time friend, was chairman at that time uh-huh. of Christianity Today, and they had hired me when this magazine was in a crisis, and Billy was out of the country. Mm. So I thought it was so interesting that Billy really asked me some tough questions. You know, some people say that you're just really in this for the money.
Huh.
And I said, well, you know, it's a nonprofit, and I long ago, you know, committed myself. I wanted to be in nonprofits. But it was, I think, his way of just kind of testing to see, you know, where is this guy coming from?
Yeah.
And we've had a very strong and positive relationship, and we were able to do some very good things with CT. But Billy was always supportive. Billy always gave wise advice.
So what was the sort of the advice he gave you from the beginning when you started there?
I think he wasn't giving me a lot of broad advice, but when specific things would come up, he would always have a response. At first, he wasn't as involved as he was later, but he would always be there at the board meetings. He would always be reporting on the general direction of evangelicalism. And mm-hmm. what struck me, too, was his involvement with so many other evangelical organizations. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether it was Fuller or Gordon Conwell. He's very involved with Gordon Conwell Seminary, and with many of the other colleges and Christian organizations.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about his involvement in the creation of CT Magazine. So what would you say was his role in the creation of Christianity Today?
Well, he was surely the founder in the sense that other people talked about the need for a magazine that would take the Bible seriously and not just let theology drift way, way to the left. He was very concerned that evangelicals were viewed as not scholarly, that they did not have a source of really thoughtful information. Christian Century, which back then was pretty liberal.
Yeah.
Christian Century was seen as leading in a certain direction, and he felt a more biblical approach was needed, and credibility. In the very first issue, he not only had made sure that the editor was a scholar, a PhD, but that a long list of scholars was on that masthead, scholars from around the world, so that it had intellectual credibility.
What do you think he meant by wanting something with a more biblical direction?
If you take the Bible seriously as the Word of God, you have one worldview. If you view religion in a very different way, as many forces were and are now. I mean, since Christianity Today was formed, our nation has really become secularist. I mean, it is all religion, in a sense, is just all acceptable, and therefore all of them are only under the microscope. And so we've become a secularist country. Back then it was moving in that direction, and I think he sensed that. And as he went out, he was talking to pastors, and he said, pastors don't have a lodestar. Pastors don't have a point of credibility for their faith. And he wanted to bring that about. And so, you know, he basically listened to a lot of people before he ever acted. He had this concept, and other people were talking about this sort of thing, but then he started to really take action. And with his father-in-law, L. Nelson Bell, who was a medical doctor but also a very savvy guy. When I interviewed people for this book, they all talked about L. Nelson Bell as being an outstanding individual. So Billy and L. Nelson Bell went to the Pew Charitable Trusts and raised the money and from other sources and took the point and led and made it happen.
Yeah. What's interesting to me about Christianity Today's creation is that when you read about Graham's sort of dreaming it up. It wasn't something that's a given that it should exist at that time. And I think now, like sometimes, and certainly there was a period where CT was a given, at least for me, like growing up, I like read it, I assumed to be around forever. I get here and I realize that's not necessarily the case. But it's interesting to me because Graham was a person who said, who saw that need and he just like made it happen.
He made it happen, and, you know, they originally sent it out to over 200,000 pastors, just put it in the mail, and so it immediately had a powerful impact. They got it listed in the Reader's Guide to Periodical Literature, so it became kind of an official magazine in this country, and it had a tremendous, tremendous impact. People in seminaries, people in colleges, the stacks were there. People picked it up and they started reading it, and it was a fresh approach, but a very clear, thoroughly believing kind of approach.
Right. What do you think? What is your sense of what his ultimate hopes were for what CT would be, not just then, but like in the future of evangelicalism?
Well, many things probably. I think he wanted it to have scholarly credibility. And of course, that was one of the difficulties because it's not a scholarly magazine, but scholars were the ones that were supposed to write it. It's amusing to me that Billy, in evaluating the first issue in his letter to Carl Henry, talks about his own article, Billy's own article, as being purple prose. Somebody had called it purple prose or whatever. I mean, he was, you know, self-effacing in this.
Yes.
But he's realizing, you know, how do you reach Joe Pastor, the most of the people that are reading this, mm-hmm. who pastors don't necessarily read all that much beyond because they're so busy.
Right.
And so they're not scholars. And at one point we measured, you know, how many readers of Christianity Today, this was years ago, when we were trying to figure out how it would be a scholarly magazine or a Time magazine type of publication, only 2 or 3% of the readers were actual academics, were actually scholars.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of dancing to do. And I think Billy understood the scholarly world, though, has to impact the pastors, has to impact the thought leaders of evangelicalism.
Right.
And one of the, I think, tremendous strengths that Billy had was his respect for scholars.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone has a respect for scholars. In fact, these days, a lot of people diss scholarship.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. scholars are sometimes doing some pretty stupid things these days.
That's true. Well, he talks too about like the liberalization of our of the academies or schools in
right.
general, of
right.
institutions.
Right. And they have become extremely liberal.
Yeah.
I mean, aggressively liberal. But Billy's friendship with Harold Ockingay, who was a scholar,
uh-huh.
And his real sense of camaraderie with scholars who shared the broad beliefs that he had,
mm-hmm.
I think was one of his great strengths.
Yeah. Yeah. And he brought – and it's interesting with those two and then Carl Henry, how he brought together these people – I'm probably forgetting some names, but he brought yeah. together these people that sort of represented the scholarly legitimization of that viewpoint, right?
Right. Absolutely. And it showed that, hey, you know, the belief in the scriptures as authoritative is not something that you are a dodo to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
I think that people have an image of or a sense of Billy Graham that is it's not scholarly or even someone who really cares about
mm-hmm.
scholarly things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to me that that would be what he's championing in this circumstance. Like
there was a lot of you know, good content, and of course you had Paul Tournier.
Yeah.
You had C.S. Lewis.
Mm.
You know, there were
so it's pretty
giants of the faith.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
but not necessarily everybody reading them.
Yes.
I remember when I came to Wheaton in 1961, all the professors were reading The Meaning of Persons by Paul Tournier, which is a great book. So there was a lot of great stuff,
mm-hmm.
but was it getting out there to a broad cross-section of people, or was it limited to the Wheaton colleges of the world?
Right. And that's interesting, too, to me, because there's the big tent aspect of what he's doing.
Yes.
Which is a whole other thing, right? Like,
right.
You can talk about scholarly, but then it seems like a really clear part of Billy Graham's vision was to open the tent as wide as possible and say, this magazine is for all evangelical Christians.
Well, and also his openness to Catholics was tremendous way back then. I mean, that was at a time when Catholics and evangelicals, they were at cross purposes. They were not comfortable with each other. But Billy said, hey— they're believers. They believe in Jesus. They believe in the script. They were not exactly on the same page, but
right.
And so the cooperation with Catholics in Boston, for instance, and some of those early crusades and mm-hmm. continuing, gave him a breadth that and he was always true to this is who I am. This is what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But he had this sense of breadth that today, I think, we just accept it. But
right.
he saw it early.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think we accept it today. I mean, well, I don't think a lot of people do. From my perspective, there are a lot of people for whom I have a lot of friends who think I'm a little loosey-goosey simply because I work with people who disagree with them about things. It's not that I disagree, but I work with people and I edit articles that argue for things they don't agree with. And the concept of big tent evangelicalism is a little in and of itself like controversial, right? What sort of pushback did Billy Graham
Oh, he received tremendous pushback, and there was some really, really nasty criticism of him as going way liberal and giving up on this and that and the other thing. And we would look at some of those things now and say, well, now that wasn't even relevant what they were, you know, confronting him about. Mm. But he would just lay it before the Lord and pray a lot. I remember Alan Emery, who was his colleague for many years, wonderful man. He was saying the thing about Billy was when he was facing something really difficult, he would pray all night about it. Mm. The sense of, yes, he had respect for scholarship, but he was also wrestling with God and engaged with God in a very real way. And I think that has come through in his life.
Did he ever? So what were some of the criticisms that?
Oh, boy, I should have those in my mind, but fortunately they've all escaped.
Yeah. That's good. That's not a terrible thing to forget. I was just wondering if he had a way of knowing. They're sort of inherently, you've got to know where the big tent ends.
Right. Well, and basically one of them, of course, was his involvement with Catholics and allowing them to sit on his platform. And, you know, anybody that's on your platform has to be kosher, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there were people from various strains that were on that platform. Yeah. And those were the early days. But that's what enabled many, many people to come to his crusades and receive Christ and so forth. So, I think it was to a large degree the evangelical belief system and who we are. It was a silo. And in one sense, now we have different silos. But boy, are people in silos, and we talk about the political situation now.
Yeah.
You talk about people in silos who cannot hear what the other people are saying.
Mm-hmm.
And he was bigger than that.
It's really interesting to think about, because I think about this a lot, especially as I read quotes from Billy Graham, stuff like that. Just the fact that he talked back then about the idea of the extreme liberalization of things. Back then, he was really well respected by people.
Right.
Nowadays, I don't know. I don't know that he could get away with it, with saying those things.
Yeah.
Like, I think he'd have a harder time. I wonder.
I think there's much greater polarization now than there was. I mean, when I joined Christianity Today, it was in Washington, D.C., and the fellowship there, the organization called the Fellowship, would have Democrats and Republicans from Congress, from the Senate, meeting together. And there was this sense of shared belief of caring for the country, of moving the country forward. At breakfast, you'd sit around a table and you'd see the sense of, hey, we're in this together.
Yeah.
We may disagree about the solutions. We may disagree with this or that, but we're in this together.
Yeah.
That's been so much lost now, this acerbic and sense of the enemy. These people are our enemies. Mm-hmm. And of course, the latest election has just exacerbated that tremendously.
This episode of The Calling is brought to you by the Christian Standard Bible, a translation that is both faithful to the original languages and really easy to read. You can learn more about the Christian Standard Bible at csbible.com/CT. I talked to Trevin Wax, the Bible and Reference publisher at Lifeway, who I actually had on the podcast back in August, about how the Christian Standard Bible is a lot like Greek yogurt.
What we like to say at Lifeway is that we are a ministry that is supported by a business model. When you think about Bible translations overall, one of the things that I'm hoping that we see more people engaging the Bible overall, not just having the Bible out to more Christians, but more Christians that are engaging the Bible, sharing the Bible with others. An example that we've used before is an example of Greek yogurt. When Greek yogurt came on the scene, all of the yogurt market actually increased as a result. And I know that sounds crazy to be comparing the Bible to yogurt. I'm not going to do any spiritual kind of, oh, the milk of God's word and things like that. But
it's right there, though. You could say
it's right. It's so close. The nerd in me just wants to do it. But all that to say, the idea and the goal with Bible publishing and the fact that we publish multiple translations is we want to see more and more people overall encountering God and His Word.
This episode of The Calling was brought to you by the Christian Standard Bible. Go to csbible.com/ct to find the right Christian Standard Bible edition for you.
This episode is brought to you by the Truce Podcast. I'm sure you've been there. You're at an event, a dinner, a small group, and someone says something like,
"If you're a Christian, you have to vote Republican."
Huh. That raises an interesting question. How did evangelicals like me get to the place where we just assumed we'd all vote one way? This season on the Truce Podcast, we're diving deep into the complexity of the 1970s and 80s to understand how evangelicals tied themselves to the Republican Party. It's a story that involves murder, corruption, redemption, and our need to be heard. I'll be talking with celebrated historians like Rick Perlstein, Pulitzer Prize winners Francis Fitzgerald and Jesse Eisinger, and some of the best guests I've ever had. Truce is the show that uses journalistic tools to look inside the Christian church. We press pause on the culture wars in order to explore how we got here and how we can do better. Subscribe to Truce anywhere you get podcasts or listen at trucepodcast.com.
So this is kind of related, but when he was first talking about CT and the tone it should take.
Yes.
Just in general, people should seek out, I'm sure we've got it published somewhere. I know we do. We ran it in the magazine recently. You should look at what his editorial on like what CT is supposed to be. Why Christianity Today, I think is what it's called. It's just amazing how prescient it is,
yes,
right? It is
absolutely
incredibly like prescient for it's not just like, oh, he really read the times. Mm-hmm. He really saw it was coming. It's just like it holds up in a way. It never feels like, oh, that's naive or that's
right,
nice
right,
for the 50s.
Right,
it really
right,
felt like,
right,
it really feels like something that was created for probably 2075. It will still be relevant even after we're all like in virtual reality bubbles
right,
or whatever.
Right.
But he uses the phrase, which I find really striking, which is that our tone should be positive, not divisive, and that we should lead in love. Why do you think at that point, when you yourself described like it was pretty okay compared to where we are now, why did at that point he feel the need to say that?
Well, you know, we're all tribal. It's always been tribal in the history of the human race.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And there was certainly tribalism back then in terms of divisiveness of different groups coming from different directions. I love what you read about being positive, not divisive, leading in love. I mean, to me, that captures Billy Graham. He was positive about, you know, we're going to make a difference and we're going to bring, you know, and not to be divisive. When you watch his interviews over the years on TV and radio and so forth, you see that he stands very clear as to what he's standing for, but he's not attacking anybody. He's not putting anybody down. He's positive about what can be done and genuine love.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons why the media has treated him so positively is because they may have really disliked where he stood, mm-hmm, but they could always tell that Billy Graham actually loved him. I think he understood himself, his own limitations and so forth.
Mm.
He understood that, yeah, he was humble, but you have to have some ego, mm-hmm, to do all that he did. And so, you know, he struggled with, you know, and put himself before God and
yeah,
prayed.
I think that understanding your own limitations thing is so important because we're in a time now where we're seeing so many people who retrospectively do not understand their own limitations.
Yes.
And there's
yes,
a lot of people now, I mean, that are trying to play the role that Billy Graham has played. And it can be really tough to stand back and go, wait, I don't know. And now it's even controversial. We've seen this recently. There was a big flare-up in the past about, you know, people who follow the Billy Graham rule, quote-unquote, and this idea of instituting your own personal integrity,
right,
like, is in and of itself controversial. So it becomes very hard. And
yes,
in and of, above and beyond getting yourself to do it, you have to then defend yourself,
yeah, right,
for doing it.
Right.
I think like it feels to me like that's the thing that maybe protected his own character integrity and legacy in general was that he was willing to say, like, I'm not going to be able to do everything. I'm not going to be able to protect myself all the time in every case. So we need some guardrails here.
Right. And he was coming off experiences from Evangelist, the Elmer Gantry kind of situation where, you know, Evangelist did take the money and did it. So he was very sensitive to that, and so were his colleagues. They were reacting to something, but reacting in a very positive way. Hey, we're going to take charge here of our own lives and not fall into those traps. Yeah. And I think another thing about Billy that just kind of blew me away when I approached him about writing this book, I had read Jim Collins' description of a level five leader, the characteristics of a level five leader. And basically, Jim Collins was kind of blown away that these best leaders, when you'd ask them about their own role, they'd say, "Oh, it's not me. No, it's the team. It's all of us, you know, together. I'm just part of this whole thing." And when I approached Billy about this book, that's exactly the response he gave me.
Yeah.
"Oh, no, it was just a bunch of us, and the Lord just kind of, you know." I mean, now, he knew he had that responsibility to be on the point, and he took it, and he was CEO, and he hovered over that.
Right.
So he was a level five leader. There's no question about it.
How do you think he balanced that? What's the balance there? I don't even know what the balance is.
Well, I think, as mentioned, he did have this great ability to see the best in people and to recognize, to identify those leaders who could be with him. I mean, who else had a team of Cliff Barrows and George Beverly Shea and all these people so close to him and with him for 50 and more years?
Yeah.
I mean, so sure, he was decisive, but he would always be talking to other people who were close to him to give him advice. And there were certain things, frankly, that he wasn't going to do. I think it's interesting that they couldn't get him to raise money specifically face-to-face.
Interesting.
He had to raise money, but he would do it not necessarily because he didn't want to come off like the guy who's buttonholing the rich people. But he did write his own fundraising letters. In fact, I found it so fascinating. I was talking to him on the phone one day, and he said to me, and this kind of just blew me away, he says, "Well, I think my greatest contribution has been in writing the letters over the years."
Huh.
And I thought,
of all the things?
Most people just say, "Hey, you guys who write these letters, you do it." I mean, maybe he's the only guy who actually wrote all his own letters. I don't know. Huh. But here he's saying, and of course he was right. Not that it was necessarily his greatest contribution, but it was a very large contribution because he put his heart and soul into that. And he really believed it, and he shared, and that raised a lot of money, which made possible Lausanne and the radio and all these other things.
Yeah. What would you say was Billy's greatest struggle? If you had to guess, what do you think was his biggest struggle?
Well, his original greatest struggle was, can I really believe all this? Mm. And you know the stories where, you know, his good buddy basically went quite liberal and lost the faith. And he struggled and wrestled with God and, you know, finally came to a conviction that the Bible was the Word of God and Jesus really was divine and so forth. So what were his struggles along the way? You know, there were a lot of currents that he had to fight against. There was always this sense of where's the money going to come from? Being overextended, or, you know, how can we, you know, draw on this? The criticism that came from many different directions. And then you've got this huge world with all the needs of it, and how do you reach out effectively? And and then I think disappointments and people that failed. There were people that, you know, really and that had to be tough for him.
If you had to say it most succinctly, what was the part of his calling that most aligned with what Christianity Today was about?
Well, I think Billy was always thoughtful. He every morning would get all the newspapers in his hotel room, and he would go through them all. I think Christianity Today wants to take a thoughtful, irenic — that's kind of a word that we have laughed about because that was one of the original words, that CT should be irenic, which, you know, is not divisive.
Yeah.
And so I think he certainly was irenic. He personified in many ways the best of CT. And is CT a scholarly publication? Is it a Time Magazine-type publication? Is it an Atlantic? Is it a Harper's? We still don't really have a perfect answer to all that because we have this multiple audience.
Yeah.
And in a sense, Billy speaks to all those groups as well.
Yes. Yeah, that's the thing that I've learned as I've been here. It's really nice to be able to say, we're like this, but for Christians. You can't do that because of the For Christians thing, because all of a sudden when you're for pastors, you're for like lay leaders, you're for small group leaders, you're for this whole wide group of people, and they all have different deeply held spiritual beliefs of the gospel, or in addition to the gospel. Like, that suddenly means like you're having to do something extremely different than what Time Magazine or The Atlantic is doing, just inherently.
Well, and we recognized the multiple audience streams early on, and so we started Leadership Journal for Pastors. Later on, Books and Culture for the Scholars. And Billy was always very supportive of all that.
Yeah.
He was just right in there with us.
The media thing. I'm just thinking about the media thing, 'cause you brought up how his interaction with the media. And I remember growing up, like, watching him on Larry King Live, and you got a sense like they liked each other.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Right.
And like, my mom would always like watch him anytime he was on Larry King. My mom was like a nice Southern Baptist lady. She still is. My mom is a Southern nice Southern Baptist lady. I remember just watching, and I think just thinking about it now, as I'm processing verbally in front of everyone, like, I feel like that impacted my view of Christians and how we can be involved in the world, because there is a skepticism. There's a mutual skepticism now, and really always has been, like, a mutual skepticism between the media and sort of conservative Christians. And my feeling has always been, there's always been an element of like, why don't we just try? Like, why don't we just try in good faith to talk to each other? So I think like Billy Graham was really — in that case, the word isn't prescient. It's like he just understood that there is a certain amount of human nature that is not totally terrible. In terms, like people do respect one another if you sort of take the first step in that direction. It can be done. Obviously, there are exceptions, probably a lot of exceptions. We'll get burned every now and then. But, yeah, that's just interesting to me.
I agree, and the more we can do to interact with the media — I mean, obviously they're hypercritical of so much, but I think CT has done some very good things in terms of reaching out. And back to Billy Graham, after 9/11, when he addressed, in a sense, the nation but the world at the National Cathedral, I thought his presentation there kind of said it all about Billy Graham. I mean, if anybody wants to just go and revisit Billy Graham, what he stands for, to see him standing there after 9/11 at the National Cathedral and bringing a message of hope that, that had the integrity of where he stood, I just thought he just did that so wonderfully. And that kind of is — has been typical of his whole career.
I've become an old man now, and I've preached all over the world. And the older I get, the more I cling to that hope that I started with many years ago and began and proclaimed it in many languages to many parts of the world. Several years ago, at the National Prayer Breakfast here in Washington, Ambassador Andrew Young, who had just gone through the tragic death of his wife, closed his talk with a quote from the old hymn, "How Firm a Foundation." We all watched in horror as planes crashed into the steel and glass of the World Trade Center. Those majestic towers built on solid foundations were examples of the prosperity and creativity of America. When damaged, those buildings eventually plummeted to the ground, imploding it upon themselves. Yet underneath the debris is a foundation that was not destroyed. Therein lies the truth of that old hymn that Andrew Young quoted, "How firm a foundation." Yes, our nation has been attacked, buildings destroyed, lives lost. But now we have a choice, whether to implode and disintegrate emotionally and spiritually as a people and a nation, or whether we choose to become stronger through all of this struggle to rebuild on a solid foundation.
He had a heart for the Clove as well, right?
Well, and he was, you know, in so many countries. I mean, the statistics are amazing, uh-huh. How many millions and millions that he spoke to. And the fact that he was, you know, going over to Russia very early on, to China, to, I mean, he was a pioneer in going into communist areas. And so he had a vision. And one of the reasons, I think, is that he was very well connected with Christian leaders around the world. He knew what they were thinking, what they were doing. And again, he would connect with the best of the Christian leaders, the ones who were thoughtful, the ones who, were irenic but were positive and effective.
Right. Okay, so last question. This is just like a personal question for you, because I want to know what you think is Billy Graham's greatest legacy. Billy Graham apparently would say the letters he wrote. I'm going to say Christianity Today because I'm biased. Right. What do you think? What do you think is Billy Graham's greatest legacy?
Well, I think it has to be viewed as a whole.
Yeah.
You'd have to take a sentence and put Christianity Today in it, and you'd have to put in Decision Magazine, which was, you know, just a wonderful public when I was much younger and was connecting with Sherwood Wirt, who was editing it. I mean, they were doing articles on Dostoevsky. Mm-hmm. His communication to the whole world, the millions of people who heard his message, and I don't know how many that came forward and committed. The leadership things that he has fostered, and I would say also the inspiration he's given to Christian institutions, whether it be seminaries, colleges, mission organizations. He was very involved with that.
You've been listening to The Calling. Harold Myra was the president of Christianity Today and has written a book called The Leadership Secrets of Billy Graham, with Marshall Shelley. Don't forget to rate and review the show on iTunes. The Calling is produced by me and Morgan Lee. It's edited by Jonathan Clausen. Theme music by Lee Rosevere, used under Creative Commons 4.0. This episode of The Calling was brought to you by the Christian Standard Bible. Go to csbible.com/CT to find the right Christian Standard Bible edition for you.
This episode was brought to you in part by the Enneagram and Marriage Podcast, an outreach dedicated to bringing joy, strength, intimacy, and purpose to couples seeking growth. Be sure to visit enneagramandmarriage.com to find your chemistry together again, or for the very first time.